radio.dominican.edu. We are the official radio station, as many of you know, here at Dominican University of California. radio.dominican.edu and 102.3 FM here in San Rafael. We have a special segment for you tonight. We have from Speak Safe. Marlene Capra is here. Marlene, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Steve?
I am doing very well. I'm super excited about tonight. As most people know, we've been promoting it, and that is this being Suicide Prevention Month. There's a big event tomorrow night in the Creekside Room here at Dominican University that people can come and attend. They can hear from you and they can hear from other speakers. They can hear from our other guest, who is a surprise. I'm going to bring her in just a moment. But I wanted to talk about tomorrow night, 6 o'clock in the Creekside Room. That is the 26th of September. The psychology department and the great, and my friend, the great Dr. Leanne Bartolini present Resilient Even Now, Finding Hope and Liberation After Exploitation. Now, you just heard from Marlene Capra, and she is the executive director at Speak Safe in Marin County, right here in Marin. And Speak Safe educates young people to recognize and avoid youth exploitation. Marlene, what does that mean?
Speak Safe, I got to tell you, we're sort of all-encompassing. So I'm going to have to backtrack and tell you we are a multi-generational team. I have an amazing team of youth, probably about 15 high schoolers, 5 college staff, all from Marin County. We are educating school staff on mandated trainings on exploitation and human trafficking prevention of our youth. They're learning of the signs, the red flags, how to report it, how to implement those protective factors, and then students are receiving curriculum from their wellness staff, and they're having these conversations and talking about these topics that have been taboo and kind of pushed under the rug for a long time, and they're tired of that, and they're becoming more proactive instead of reactive. And then we're educating parents and caregivers. We've educated our law enforcement here in Marin County and our community members, and it is because of these amazing, incredible team of youth interns that are normalizing this conversation.
Can you tell me, when you talk about those things that are taboo, let's get right to it. And what do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times we look at a youth being exploited or trafficked, and many times students try to come forward and they want to tell us. And when they do, they're not believed or they're shamed into being responsible. We see that a lot with sextortion. There's guilt. And because of that, we can see some mental health issues. And a lot of times, if you look at what's happening with their youth, there's this intersection. There maybe could be substance abuse or mental health issues or truancy. You connect those dots, and at the core is someone that needs help because they're being exploited.
Is it bigger than what we hear on the news? We really only hear about, like you said, sexploitation, those big stories that either involve very, very young people or celebrities. Those are the ones that we hear about. But it seems to me, based on the last couple of weeks of reading up on you and our guest, Brielle, and your organization, it's much bigger than that.
You know, it really is. And I think in 2018, the digital platform just really changed the way how we see our youth being exploited. There's no doubt about that. And so our trainings are sort of relative to what's happening in Marin. I work a lot with law enforcement and Homeland Security, also our surrounding counties. But what we are seeing is many times youth are being exploited, and by middle school. Many times, many of them are, and none of us even know. And then they continue to go down a path to continue to be more vulnerable to being exploited. It doesn't know a certain zip code, and I think that's hard for all of us to kind of get our heads around, especially maybe here in Marin County. But it is in every zip code. And because of how we normalize it, and it's been normalized so much in our culture with what's happening just on the digital platform, how are youth the entry points of maybe trusted adults in their life, being exploited by peers? There's so many different entry points. But at the same time, I want to say we have education and support and awareness that we can all actually do something about this. We just have to learn about this.
That's great. I'm glad we can be a part of it here at Penguin Radio at Dominican. Our other guest to Marlene's immediate right is Brielle Decker. 2 decades ago and at the age of 18, Brielle was forced to marry religious cult leader Warren Jeffs, who led and still leads from prison, I believe, the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a polygamous movement originally out of Arizona. And the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints has no affiliation or ties to the Church of Latter-day Saints. Welcome, Brielle.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
I'm happy you're here. I've read a lot about you. It's really cool to see you in person.
Yeah. It's good to see you guys.
And you are going to be the speaker tomorrow night at this event that is sponsored by the Psychology Department and the Psychology Club. And for those of you who don't know, who don't listen to Penguin Radio often, I got my psych undergrad here at Dominican decades ago. And this is a really cool and important event. Clearly, this is an important event that reaches far beyond that which we think about every day. As I mentioned to Marlene, it seems like it's limited to the when there is a celebrity involved kind of thing. And yet she just talked about many entry points, and you were one of those when you were just, well, how old were you?
Well, I was born and raised in the FLDS. I grew up very indoctrinated. I never went to public school. It was all homeschool. I did have a father who taught me some critical thinking by his actions. He couldn't voice it because he would get repercussions for that, but he still would hesitate and say, "I'll pray over that," and stuff like that, which taught me to also hesitate and pray over things. And it led me to question a lot of things later on in my life.
So you talked about repercussions a moment ago. Like what? For those of us who didn't go to church regularly.
Okay, so Warren Jeffs had a lot of control and power in our lives. He was the prophet, so it was a different kind of relationship with all of his followers. He had 10,000 followers before he became the leader. And repercussions, so my parents were in arranged marriage, and one of the repercussions, because they were gifts to each other, could be that he would take away your spouse and remarry them to somebody else, or kick you out of the church, which meant that you would, everything you knew around you your whole life would be just swept out. And he sent 8-year-olds at times and told the parents to drop them off, and they had a bad spirit and they would never recover. And so they had to start their life on the outside. It was very scary to the people who were still following. They didn't want to ask questions. They didn't want to do anything that would cause them to have that repercussion.
An 8-year-old.
Yeah, he did do that at times.
Yeah. So, yeah. And how old were you when you were first introduced to Warren Jeffs, who is every bit as much as David Koresh or Jim Jones or Charles Manson, a cult leader who had control of his followers' minds?
Right. So I don't remember the first time I was introduced to Warren Jeffs.
Approximately.
I do know that when I went to school, when I was 6 years old, my first grade teacher was his first wife. So that's when it like really played. And he was the principal of the school.
Ah, okay. And your folks signed you up for that school?
Yes, it was a homeschool. Only FLDS people went to that school.
Okay, and your parents never had any reservations about this relationship? Not later in your life, but the relationship that the prophet had with his followers, where he made all decisions.
My parents, because the whole system is built on reporting, a lot of parents, you'll hear them tell their stories from that are now ex-FLDS, and they don't even dare bring it up to their spouse. Because once that happens, they have the risk factor of being separated immediately. So if the spouse agrees with them, they can leave together. But if the spouse says, you shouldn't be talking about this, then most likely they're going to be kicked out in a day or two.
So you met Warren Jeffs at 6 years of age. Over the next dozen years, he married 64 other women, including you,
right,
at age 18. And as I read, 7 more after that before the whole thing came to an end.
Right. I was 18, but others weren't necessarily 18.
Okay, so you were 18 years of age. There was no low-end limit, right? That was part of the problem that got him in trouble.
Right.
Not the religious piece, not the control piece, but the underage piece.
That was the one that put him in prison for life. But he...
Not to mention polygamy.
Should have been caught for other things too, I believe.
Okay. All right. Perhaps you'll talk about that tomorrow night. Because tomorrow night, everybody, in the Creekside Room here on campus, you'll get to hear Brielle's full story. I just want to give you a little taste of what you're going to get tomorrow. And for those of you who can't be here, this is an amazing story. And I've never had the chance to talk to someone who's been a part of this. I've never had a chance to talk to someone like Marlene, who has a lot of answers for young people who are exposed to the exploitation. Let's call them opportunity. People take advantage of young people quite often. Do you feel like that's what happened to you?
Yes, I definitely feel like it was a very slippery slope after I did turn 18. And the whole thing about waking up, like, you know, being treated as an adult right when you're 18 years old in the law enforcement and in all of that kind of stuff was still to this day, I feel like there needs to be more work done for the people that are 18. Because, like, if you're underage, they automatically get, like, all these resources if they're considered trafficked. And it's sad and it's devastating because it hurts their brain so much. But the 18-year-olds kind of get trapped because they're just assumed a lot of times that they're an accomplice. And so I just feel like there needs to be more done.
Brielle Deck is our guest here at Penguin Radio. So, all right, so you meet Warren Jeffs at 6 years of age. And then when he paid attention to you, that must have felt good.
Not for me.
Tell me.
Yeah, I knew a lot about him by the time I did turn 18 years old. My sister was already married to him. And I knew that I didn't have the qualifications to be treated well in his family. So because she wasn't treated well either. So I researched that kind of stuff and figured out that, I didn't really want to go in his family, but I didn't dare say no to him. Most people think that in that environment you would, because most of the girls want, because he has so much power and so much authority and all of that. Most of the girls, I believe, were taught to believe that it was an honor. But for me, I was terrified of it and didn't dare tell anyone I was.
So when you were very young, probably not terrified of him, but became terrified over the next dozen years.
Right.
And then when a cult leader takes you as his wife, since I know very little about this, you have to educate me here. Does he ask you to marry him? Does he say, you are going to marry me next week? How does it work?
He in my case, so he had 3 different routes that he indoctrinated us on before that day came. So the first route was he would just tell you, like, you are supposed to marry so-and-so. You can say yes or no at the ceremony. That's what happened to my parents. They were pulled aside at church and told, there's going to be a wedding. It's going to be your wedding, and you can say yes or no at the ceremony. But they had never met each other. So
until their wedding day.
Until their wedding day. And so it just became a matter of trust in the leaders, and they didn't have a reason to say no, so they just said yes. For me, mine was like a different type of scenario that he also educated us on. In mine, he kind of put it onto me. He was like, who does God want you to marry? And I was like, he's the one that groomed me. So I'm like, I don't dare say anything right here because if I'm wrong, then I'm going to get a repercussion, but what I did say is I wondered if I was supposed to go in the family with my sister. And he said, you have a strong testimony of God, which that meant that was the confirmation that he had over every wedding.
When you were a child, did you view him as God?
When I was a child, I viewed him as not as God, but I was supposed to treat him as if he was God on earth.
Very interesting. This is totally fascinating. Brielle Decker, everybody, is talking about her life in the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, and Marlene Capra, who's the executive director over at SpeakSafe here in Marin, which protects young people from youth exploitation. And just a few more questions, because this is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
I've heard your story online, and the questions that I came up with were a few that I didn't hear online. I wanted this to be a little different.
Yeah.
You know, because I know a lot of people ask the same questions, and I think people really not only fascinated but confused by this, how you were one of 14 children.
Right.
That your folks didn't meet until the day they were wed, which at this day and age seems incomprehensible. And yet, at that time, it was absolutely normal, right, within the group.
Well, if you understand, like, trauma in general, like, I've been to foster care trainings now just because I was interested. They have to teach about trauma a lot with children that are going through foster care because most of them come in with trauma. So for me, it was really fascinating to learn that as a baby, the brain has more connections than the internet. And the child is trying to figure out which ones to keep. And the ones that they keep become strong. So it's actually, if you think of it that way, it kind of leads, like, if you're 18 years old, the strong ones are a lot different. It's kind of a form of almost handicap. You can create new brain pathways, you can learn new things, you can get educated, but in that group environment, they control all the learning, the education, and all it's a lot of indoctrination to what they want you to hear. When I was growing up, I don't remember them saying, what do you want to be when you grow up? It was always, you are going to be a mother in Zion. So it was like a cycle.
Fascinating stuff. Right here on Penguin Radio, and Brielle Decker is our guest. She was the 65th wife of the prophet Warren Jeffs, who 20 years ago was a big deal. Now Warren Jeffs incarcerated for life. I don't even know. I read one report that said he has a possibility of parole a long time from now, but I read others that said no chance of parole because ultimately, he was found guilty on multiple charges of not only child exploitation, which involved a lot of sex with a lot of minors. Mm-hmm. You were one of 72 total wives. You were the 65th. And in your case, you were 18. But a lot of those wives were much younger than 18. Isn't that right?
Right.
Like how low did the number go?
I believe he had an 11-year-old at one time. But
an 11-year-old wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not the polygamy, really, although that's illegal.
Right.
Right?
It was more the child brides, appointed marriage, pedophilia. Yeah.
Where are his other wives now? Are they speaking out? Are they a part of this?
There's about, I think, 8 or 9 now that I've counted that have escaped in their mind and also physically. I don't believe, like, out of 79, that's not a good ratio. That's why I say the 18-year-olds, because he tells them the world doesn't want them and stuff like that. So it's very tricky to rescue somebody who believes that what he's saying is the way it's going to play out in court and everywhere else. For me, I have testified against Warren Jeffs in federal court and won, and I believe I'm the only one that was over 18 that has successfully done that.
So you just said something very interesting that makes me think. And that is, they have escaped physically and mentally.
Right.
9 or 10 of, right. Was it a total of 79 or 72?
It was 79 by the time he went to prison. They believe there may have been spiritual wives since then.
Okay. So he's still, though, active. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
FLDS is still an active organization that is run under the prophet who is incarcerated.
Right.
Seems outrageous, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And yet the mental piece you just talked about must be the toughest part to break away from.
It is, yes.
And I'm going to have Marlene talk about that at the end of this segment, because it leads in perfectly to what it is we're all doing here tonight, and that is celebrating and championing this idea that young people don't have to fall victim to exploitation. Isn't that right, Marlene?
That's exactly true. They don't, especially if they have one person in their life. And all it takes is one person, and it did in Brielle's, let's face it, who knew the red flags, who saw something that stood out for her, that realized that this person's being exploited, this person needs help. And if we're all educated, we can see that. But yes, you know, for many of our youth being exploited, and I was just listening to everything you're saying, it's so true, with predators that are exploiting our youth and the grooming factor that takes place with our youth over time and how they're targeted at such a young age. And that happens right here. They're targeted at a young age. There's some vulnerability. They identify. They come in and give them support. And especially as a young person, you need a lot of support. And then they begin to isolate them. And it's usually in that isolation that person's exploited. And it takes, and we were talking about this, but it takes someone about seven times of trying to leave, they say, an exploited situation, a traffic situation that I see in the Bay Area here, before they're really able to do so.
Let's talk about that for a moment. So you agreed, or you were told that you would be married when you turned 18,
right,
to the prophet.
Well, not before it happened.
Oh, you weren't told before it happened.
I was bullied that I would be, but I didn't know for sure until the day that it happened.
Wow. So the door just flung open and said, it's time.
Well, yeah. Well, my father came in the room and he said, my mother actually screamed no behind me. I turned around to see my father with a red face, and he said, let's go for a drive. So they already knew enough to know that it was probably going to be a bad day for them, because they had other children. I was their 11th child. So they had gone through similar things in the past. When I drove away with my father, because we went on this drive, he took me to Warren Jeffs because that's what he believed he had to do for the rest of his family and for my mother and everybody at the time. He was crying.
Had you seen your father cry before?
I think I had, but it was really significant that day.
I bet.
Yeah, he told me now, because he did get kicked out of the church and was told to go start a new life, like told that he could never come back to the FLDS after my escape, 1 week after I escaped.
Okay.
They used a different reason, but yeah.
Okay, so clearly at age 18, you were old enough and you had been through enough to know this was, something was not right about this whole thing.
Right.
Right. And then your story is interesting in that you physically tried to escape because you had mentally left.
Right.
A long time prior to your 18th birthday. But then starting at age 18, or was it before, you tried to physically escape the compound?
Yeah, I tried 10 times at least, 10 major times that we can count, to get out mentally and physically. And at that time, there wasn't a lot of resources, and I didn't know how to get a hold of them. So it took me longer than I believe some of the people have nowadays.
Was the compound in Arizona, was that located out far away from a gas station, some other way you could, because back then you didn't have a smartphone.
Yeah, so he started new compounds. He was the one who started the Yearning for Zion Ranch in Texas. He's actually in prison in Texas. He started a compound in Colorado. He started a compound. They actually have records of 70 compounds currently that he has all over.
But you were in Arizona.
I traveled a lot.
Okay. Yeah. So where was the compound that you escaped from?
The one I escaped from was Colorado City. I had to work my way back there.
Colorado City, Arizona.
Because Colorado City, Arizona is an older compound that has a mixture of FLDS and XFLDS in it, where the newer ones are all only FLDS with a guard tower and gates around them that they drive around every 15 minutes. I was on 24-hour watch.
Because you had tried to escape before. Yep. And as the story goes, correct me if I'm wrong, you noticed that on the window of your room, there were only two screws that you had to get out. And you knew that if you went out that window and didn't make it permanently, then there would be a lot more screws.
Yeah.
So did you do it at night?
No, it was broad daylight because I had tried that morning and got brought back. Some FLDS saw me on the street running.
So you're just running in, did you have clothing? Did you have shoes? What's the story there?
So the last time when I escaped, I just had the clothes on my back. The time before that is actually the time that I didn't have my shoes with me, but I had everything else. But they like to mix those two up. I mean, I don't know why, but like a lot of times it gets mixed up. But like, yeah, the first time... If you watch, I don't know if you want to talk about the documentary, but if you watch the documentary, the first time I actually tried to escape, I did get pretty far. I went clear to the police in South Dakota and didn't know how to communicate. And so I ended up going back with my family. They sent me to Colorado City. So that's how I transferred from South Dakota out of the elite compounds. It's the first one in Warren Jeff's family to come back to Colorado City, which had XFLDS and FLDS dynamic in that. So that when I did get locked up in solitary confinement with two screws only, I did have some places that I could probably run to. I just got caught that morning. So the second time I took like back roads, when I did get the screws out, I didn't dare open any drawers because there was his family still there listening and calling him. He actually, now I know he was in a meeting. I didn't know that at the time. I just know he didn't show back up immediately. They actually told me to lay down and read. So when I exited, they actually didn't notice for 2 hours that I had both screws undone. They knew one of them for sure, but they didn't realize that both of them had been undone. One of them was... I got out with some scissors. The other one was halfway sticking out and too tight, so I banged on it until it broke off. So they knew that one because I stopped banging on it.
How terrified were you when you got out and you realized, okay, I'm out and now I gotta go somewhere? Was it terrifying or what was it?
For me, it wasn't, I was in survival mode and I didn't even realize I would even succeed. I had no hope. I just felt like I was really determined to try till the end. I had to know for myself that I did everything that I knew how to do, and it worked. So when I made it to Tennessee, which is where I went to change my name and was legally
adopted. Did you hitchhike?
No, I went to a family, and the family got me in touch with an organization.
Did they hide you?
And they did hide me.
Yeah.
They hid me until I did. Small organizations paid my way to Nashville, Tennessee. And I stayed there for 2 years, found an attorney who would change all of that paperwork legally. And then I ended up, when they changed my SSI, they didn't change my Social Security, they didn't change my SSI in the same month. So I couldn't pay my rent. So I called my attorney to ask if they could speed up the process so I could have my SSI in time.
So now you're 20 rent. Years old.
I was 26.
Oh, you're 26 now. Okay.
Yeah. So he said that he had an airplane pilot who was XFLDS and Short Creek, which is Colorado City, Arizona. It's becoming mostly XFLDS. And he said, it's changing. And if anybody's in crisis, give them these airplane tickets and tell them to fly home.
Okay.
So, yeah, I did.
Yeah, that's great. So let's bottom out before we start our way back up of this amazing story. And the bottom for me, having heard you and looked in your eyes now for half an hour, is the guilt the people involved must have felt, and tell me where I'm wrong here, that if they were to ever do anything contrary to what the prophet deemed right and necessary and meaningful, was you don't go to heaven because he says you don't go to heaven. Is that right?
Yes. A lot of them believe when they get kicked out or when they leave that they're actually going to hell. And also a lot of them know what will, like, the repercussions. Like, in my case, I was put up on, like, on a hill, you know, like, and told, if you question, if you try to run away, this is how you're going to be treated. So nobody wanted to go there.
I bet the description was awful of yeah. what's going to happen if you go against
right.
this group.
Right.
Let's start our upward
okay.
part of this beautiful story now, because it does have a happy ending, thankfully, for you.
Right.
When you ultimately, you had escaped mentally and physically, Warren Jeffs had been incarcerated, and you were legally divorced, you were then given, as part of the settlement, the compound in Arizona.
It was in Hilldale, Utah.
Oh, that's in Hilldale.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so in Utah. It is now called the Short Creek Dream Center.
Right.
And this is a place where XFLDS can go and not fear anything. Isn't that right?
Well, it's a place where any polygamy group is prioritized. So any person escaping polygamy in general, we prioritize those people.
So you were awarded this gigantic home. I saw a picture of it online. And by the way, you can go to BrielleDecker.com
right.
to see a picture of it now that you've heard her story. Or at least part of it. You can hear the whole thing tomorrow night in the Creekside Room here at Dominican University of California. And of course, you're listening to Penguin Radio here at DU. But you can see a picture of this gigantic mansion. And you were awarded that
right.
as part of this settlement.
It did become part of the settlement, but it originally was, it was like the landowners that decided to give it to me.
Okay, and then yeah. you donated that?
Yeah, I donated that. Everything I could donate to the Dream Center, which is a worldwide organization. And you can find their stuff on shortcreekdreamcenter.org.
shortcreekdreamcenter.org. Okay, great. And how many, do people live there year-round, or do they come visit? Or tell me about the people that are there
okay.
being helped.
So It's very set up to let them choose their own goals, they set their own priorities, and as long as they're keeping peace in the house, with that many people, we do have some standard rules that we have to have, but as long as they're keeping peace and also working toward their own goals that they set for themselves, they can stay. So they do stay for years sometimes, yeah.
Okay, and how often do you visit?
I work there.
So you're there all the time?
Not all the time, but a lot of the time. I have my own house. So now in Colorado City is our house. And I work about 40 hours a week at the Dream Center. I have a team of people. I work directly with the residents. We call them residents. I'm an RA, so I'm a residential aide. And I have a team that helps me, so I don't have to get burnt out, you know, and stay there all the time. And we rotate. And we, inform each other of what's going on so that we can pick up the pieces and carry on helping. So, yeah, helping the residents. Make sure that we have exactly what they need and get it. And, you know, we help them drive to work. We'll help them get a job, drive to work if in town until they can get their own down payment on a car. We have a transitional house now, so we're able to help them get housing, you know, long-term housing, so like they can, if they're in the program for quite a while and graduate and all of that, read the books, go to the classes, because we teach life skills and things. If they graduate the program and are still needing, like, they want to be in college or they want to go to get a down payment on a house or something like that, then sometimes we have transitioned them over to the transitional house, which is to open up beds for people in crisis in the main Dream Center for people who haven't graduated yet.
Are you hopeful?
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. It seems like you've been through a lot.
Yeah, I feel like in my story, to think about like surviving, you know, Warren Jeffs had 10,000 followers before he became the leader. So to survive, you know, that is a huge thing. And then to have a story that I can help other people and mentally, you know, climb that hill that, you know, among people that I didn't know at all, and have them learn to trust me and have them analyze, you know, all that, you know, I've been to court, you know, I've done what it takes to be who I am. So to be able to have a inspirational story that I can use to help other people realize that even if you have a family that's after you, or if, you know, it's not always going to work out, but like, hopefully, you know, like there are times it does work out. And even if it came down to a really hard time, you could think about something positive, which I hope helps people.
It's absolutely fantastic. She is okay. Our speaker tomorrow night in the Creekside Room here at Dominican University of California, in the presentation put on by the Psychology Department and the Psychology Club. That's at 6 o'clock, September 26th in Creekside. And you'll get to hear a more complete story, an hour and a half story, from Brielle Decker, BrielleDecker.com, BrielleDecker.com. Right? If people want to find out more, and there's a lot there, and it's a beautiful website, and you're a beautiful spirit. I really appreciate you being here. This is great.
Thank you.
Marlene, what a story.
Oh, it's awesome.
And I only heard a half an hour of it. Tomorrow's an hour and a half. We're going to get the whole thing.
The whole thing, and it's so encouraging. Thank you, Brielle.
Yeah, so with your group, mm-hmm. now that you just heard it firsthand, you're going to hear more tomorrow night, how can you apply what we've learned here today, and I don't know if the other people in your organization are listening tonight, if they're coming tomorrow, mm-hmm. and can a story like Brielle's add life to what the important work that you people do?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Brielle's story mm-hmm. brings awareness and hope, and so when we all really understand exploitation and how it happens and what it looks like when we see someone, we'll know how to offer support. We'll understand what support we have in our community. We'll understand maybe what this person needs or the signs, how to report it. That's so important. And how to be that trusted, healthy adult in a young person's life. And so much of what Brielle said is just, I see that with our youth here in Marin County. In just how they're maybe groomed in certain situations or trafficked or exploited by their own peers to want to belong. I mean, they have vulnerabilities as young people, and they're good vulnerabilities in the sense, like we all do, the need to be accepted and loved, but sometimes it's in those places that we do see our youth being exploited. And at the same time, it's so hopeful to be able to understand what we can do about it, and we are doing something about it. And yes, our youth interns will be there tomorrow night on the front lines explaining more about that as well.
That's wonderful. As a professor here at Dominican for over 20 years now, and as I was telling you in our pre-show meeting, I went to Dominican as an undergrad and then was fortunate enough to end up working here. And I am around young people all the time. And so this is great that speaksafe.org, which is your organization,
right
here in Marin, such an important resource. I didn't know it was here. I do now, which is a part of the beauty of something like this radio program. And people will subsequently be able to listen to it as a podcast and then hear Brielle's story in person tomorrow night. These kinds of events really do educate. And the first thing you said was, our goal is to educate. If everybody's educated, far fewer of these cases will occur.
when we know more, we have to do better. We can do better. And that's the exciting thing, I think, about this. Let's face it, sort of like the pandemic, we had to get our heads around how do we approach it. And we did. And we have those safeguards in place. There's nothing different in this respect. It's understanding, putting those in place, and knowing we can be proactive and not reactive when this comes up. And yeah, our youth are, I got to tell you, if you don't have, I think, the young people on the forefront of this movement working with you, you're just not effective, because we can't educate the community without knowing how can we support you better? How can we bring this information to your peers and other students at your school? What would help you? Tell us. So anyway, we'll hear more about that tomorrow night. Sorry, I'm super passionate about this topic and just thrilled to be here.
Well, that's what makes you great at what you do, clearly. I want to thank you very much, Marlene Capra from SpeakSafe.org, and of course, Brielle Decker, being here to tell your story tomorrow night, 6 o'clock. I know I've said it over and over, but now I'm really excited about it, having both of you ladies here to talk about it. I've been reading so much about both of you over the last week, and then to actually get to meet you and hear your stories is great. All right, everybody. Well, this went twice as long as I had hoped. That's a good thing. That means we were engaged in really important, meaningful conversation, and I love it. It was just great. So thank you both very much for being here. You're listening to Penguin Radio, everybody. We'll get back to our regular programming now, and one last thank you to Marlene and Brielle right here on Penguin Radio.